Welcome to the Media Cat Magazine podcast. I'm your host, Mike Pigger, editor at the magazine. And for the pod today, I'm having a little chat with Paddy Gilmore, the founder of Studio Gilmore, an organization which helps brands make more money by understanding how and when to use humor. Hello, welcome, Paddy. Thanks for talking to us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So we've done a sort of written interview on some of the things we're going to talk about today, but so we're covering some similar ground, but, you know, some people read, some people listen, some do both. So I figured, you know, we'd touch on a few similar things and a few different things. But first off, I wanted to, our March theme at the magazine was humor. So I wanted to ask you, what made you settle on humor as the sort of backbone for your business? I was reading you sort of studied humor at master's level at university, right? Was that where everything kind of started for you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, basically, I was doing a master's in history of art. And as part of that, I was looking at how conceptual artists use humor in their art practice. And that was probably about 25 years ago, I did that. I was very interested in how they would use humor as a form of satire, maybe satirizing, you know, consumerist culture and so forth. And so that then got me into thinking a bit more about humor techniques, humor mechanisms, humor styles. And basically, it was a hobby for many years. I would read up about these things and I thought, you know, this is so, so interesting. And then working in advertising, I started to see the application of all this humor science within advertising. So when I started my consultancy, it felt like a natural fit to bring a lot of what we've learned from humor science to bear within the whole marketing world.
Maybe early on you didn't get to do that, right? Because in your career you worked for Visa and Bloomberg and places like that, and like humor doesn't really spring to mind with those companies. Looking back, were you sort of always trying to inject humor into those things, or was it always just sort of in the background for you and you're like, it's never going to fit at these organizations?
Yeah, I definitely tried. But, you know, I was early on in my career and I realized to a certain extent I had to play the game a little bit. But it was interesting. It was one of those things that just kept on nagging at me. And, you know, so as time went on, I thought, well, I feel I've got to do something, you know, like this. And obviously founding my consultancy was a great marker in the sand saying, okay, this is where I stand. This is what it is I do. And this is how I can benefit brands.
When we were talking about the other week, we were talking about the science behind humor, and you just recently touched on it just now. Humor studies is this rapidly growing field. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like how rapidly growing are we talking? And are there many people doing sort of what you do?
Sure. It is growing hugely right now. Basically, up until about the 20th century, you know, the dawn of the 20th century, humor science wasn't really known at all. And then two big things happened. Firstly, there was a French philosopher called Bergson who wrote a book called On Laughter. And that was published in 1900. And then in 1905, Sigmund Freud published a book called Jokes and Their Relationship to the Unconscious. And these two thinkers were the first thinkers to say, okay, we can actually study this subject and there is a lot here to be studied. And that basically started to get the ball rolling. People say that up until about the 1980s, you could read every single thing written about humor science and everything that was written is possible to read. Since then, it's grown so, so quickly, it isn't possible to do that. But, you know, the amount of papers being published, academic papers being published annually is huge. And there is a feeling that this core human trait, which causes both immense joy and can cause immense distress, is a valid area to be studied, you know, in academia, you know, as well as obviously commercially.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Freud and then obviously like people writing, there's a lot more sort of works coming out now and it's increasing. Are there any sort of other writers or books in the field that are worth mentioning or any kind of modern sort of thinkers in this area? I mean, are you putting out anything? We've got any books on the horizon?
Well, I haven't written a book yet, but there are a number of very good books within the field. A very good book, which I often recommend to clients, is A Smile in the Mind. That has come out in two editions. The first one came out in the mid-90s. That looks specifically at humor as it's used typically within graphic design. That's a very good book. Taschen's The Copy Book is also a very good compendium of humor as used. in advertising. In terms of the actual theory of humour, there are dozens of academic articles with very long and fancy names. So unless you want to get into that deep end, you know, I would definitely recommend those two books first as like a starting point.
Yeah, I think that's probably good. Like, I'd say that, you know, the more practical and perhaps commercial applications of what we're talking about, considering sort of what we cover as a magazine. But anyone that wants to delve into the academics, I'm sure they can get in touch with you and find out lots more. I remember at one point we were talking about, all these, obviously the interview you did for us, and we've had a few chats in the past. You talked about going into clients to do a humor audit. I don't know if that sounds funny or frightening. It's kind of the humor and audit don't really go together as words, but, or maybe they do. How are these typically received by clients? You know, do you find they're open to them? Or
I find they're very open to them. I mean, one of the difficulties when you're talking about humor is people find it very difficult to define. So people might talk about a dry sense of humor or a sarcastic sense of humor, but what exactly are they? What are the terms that we're using here? So typically with a humor audit, that's my way of going into it to meet a client and saying, okay, this is how we're going to describe what humor is, what it does, and the different forms of humor. So, I mean, what I often compare it to is chemistry, the periodic table of elements. You know, there's lots of different elements and they combine in different ways. And humor is a very, very similar thing. And once I explain this, I tend to find that clients are very much on board, because this thing that they've known for many, many years and used socially on many occasions, suddenly they start to realize, okay, there is a science here, there's a body of knowledge, and we can quantify this and know exactly what it is that we're using here.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's funny you say that. I was just thinking when we did our I think it was for March, actually, our humor theme. And when we did that theme, I start to use the words interchangeably in the magazine. So, but often I was taking pause because I was like, well, humor, comedy, funny, amusing, titillating, I don't know, like they're sort of all the same thing, but they're all slightly different as well. So, you know, you'd be like, oh, comedy. And you're like, well, that's actually kind of different to just saying something's like amusing, really. And then, you know, so we've already kind of got words we use which describe sort of different kinds of humor to a certain degree.
Yeah. And it's also very interesting because, you know, these things change dramatically. I mean, if you take the word humor, it's often seen as being subservient to wit. Wit is very much like the kind of, you know, intelligent humor. But if you go back a couple of hundred years, wit was seen as beneath humor. Humor was high, was like, you know, in the same realm as beauty. Wit was seen as being harsher. And, you know, in some ways, even malevolent. So this is where things change. The very etymology of humor, you know, because it comes from the idea of medieval idea of the four humors within the human body. The etymology of it is fascinating.
Yeah, so it's probably one we could talk about for a long time. Do you get many sort of objections to the work you do? I mean, we're obviously talking about the words humor, and you mentioned going back into history. Is it ever seen as frivolous by clients? Because, like, you know, in the way I think about sometimes the way that, you know, the Academy, the Oscars, they judge films and they award dramas all the time. Dramas always get, comedies rarely get a look in. I mean, trying to remember the last time a comedy won a Best Film Oscar, I think there's maybe one or two examples. You know, it's not many.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it can be seen as frivolous, as you say, but I think, you know, the key thing which I find with clients, and this is one which I communicate a lot, is that in order to convey a serious subject and to have that subject be memorable and for, you know, the audiences to be accessible to that, you have to sweeten the pill. It just isn't possible to convey that many serious topics and for people to remember them all. However, if you can convey something in a fashion which is amusing, dash entertaining, dash intriguing and warm, then people are far more interested in that. So often there's a yin and a yang, you know, there's the seriousness, but when that's accompanied by humor, then that can, you know, really get into people's heads far more easily.
Yeah, I always think it's a knife edge, because, again, going back to actors, but there are certain actors that maybe historically people have seen as comedians, and then they go and do some harrowing drama, and their performance is amazing. And you just, I've had it in the past where people like Robin Williams, and they've talked about how it's a knife edge, you know, sort of humor and tragedy. And it's such an interesting one to like, they're often some of the best people to dance either side of that line, I think, which is quite fascinating.
But it's interesting because if you take Shakespeare's tragedies, one of the most interesting aspects of them is the number of jokes there are in his tragedies. You know, Hamlet is full of jokes, and Hamlet is obviously one of his, you know, greatest plays. So when we think in terms of, you know, well, there's one extreme which is comedy and one extreme which is tragedy, it isn't, that isn't the case. You know, humor is used for, you know, the great dramatists use it because they know that audiences need to often laugh as a form of release and relief when they, you know, see something on screen which can be quite distressing.
Yeah, it's it's almost the why is it important to laugh at Awake, maybe, you know? So it's a cathartic release and all of that. Yeah, humans are weird. Our emotions are funny things. But I suppose on that note, actually, like, do you have any sort of challenges of the types of humor around the world? Or are there sort of certain universal truths that, you know, work globally for some businesses? I'm just thinking, I once watched a Norwegian comedy, and I got that it was doing Norwegian humor, but I didn't get the humor because it wasn't my kind of humor. And I was like, I know they're being funny. That's a joke right there. I'm pretty sure the way they delivered it, but I'm like, I'm just blank. Like, I feel nothing.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, you know, a good way to look at it is that there were certain humor mechanisms which are used all around the world. And we know which humor mechanisms are the most popular universally. And so we can use those in our advertising. But in terms of the content, so that's, if you like, what goes on top of the mechanism. In terms of the content, obviously, that varies hugely. A good example of this is if you take East Asian countries, so South Korea, China, Japan, they typically have a more collectivist culture. And that is reflected in the type of humor that they enjoy. If you take other countries such as, you know, Western Europe, America, Australia, typically the cultures are far more individualistic. So there's different views there on the types of humor that work. What's interesting is when people say humor doesn't cross borders, it's one of those questions, one of those comments I really like to unpack to find exactly what is their thing of and exactly, you know, the best way to approach that problem, if it is a problem at all.
You briefly actually touched on the whole sort of, you know, humor either causing pleasure if it's done right or distress if it's done wrong. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, do you think that's why sometimes brands steer, you know, in recent years at least, have been steering clear of it? Are they, you know, sort of worried about the kind of some sort of cancel culture thing if they try a humor and they get it wrong, so to speak?
Yeah, that actually happens. It's interesting. Before starting my consultancy, I remember speaking to a senior marketing manager at Audible, which is obviously part of Amazon. And I remember our conversation began with him saying to me, I would never use humor, it's toxic. And then about 10 minutes later, he said to me, I've got to be honest with you, all of the marketing campaigns I've ever enjoyed have been funny. And so there's almost like the head against the heart. The head says, oh, I shouldn't use humor because it's going to be problems. But the heart says, actually, this is what I enjoy. And so what I say, well, if that's what you enjoy, and that's what audiences enjoy, and that's what creatives enjoy creating, and it's obviously, it's, you know, the most impressive form of brand messaging. It makes people more likely to buy. Then surely we should explore that further.
Maybe humor is the guilty pleasure emotion, you know, like the sort of guilty pleasure movie or music or something like that. They're like, no one wants to admit it, but they're actually like, they prefer comedy in the before. Oh yes, I watch dramas all the time. No, you don't. You like trashy comedies or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I remember once reading a review of. An interview with Alan Ayckbourn, who's a famous playwright, who was famous for his comedies. And he said that a reviewer had seen one of his comedies and said, I laugh shamelessly. And Alan Ayckbourn's response was, why shamelessly? You know, what is there to be ashamed of in laughing? You know, one of the most wonderful emotions, one of the most wonderful articulations ever. You know, so when you say a guilty pleasure, I would kind of amend that slightly, just saying, well, it's basically a pleasure. You know, I don't think guilt should really come into it.
Maybe there's a vulnerability to it. I don't know. I mean, obviously, there's a vulnerability to technically all the emotions if you're feeling them. But I wonder if there's a certain, you're sort of letting your guard down as a, you know, a big serious person that does big serious business. I don't know, like a, you know, I'm a proper person that, you know, takes the world seriously, and then laughing, you're sort of like just letting your guard right down, you know, you're quite vulnerable in that sense.
Yeah, there is. That's a very good point. I think vulnerability is definitely a part of it, but I think there's also a sense of community. So if you go to a stand-up show, you know, it's your laughter is not just dependent on the quality of the jokes being told. It's dependent on the fact that you are within a group of 100, 150, 200 people, all laughing at a similar kind of thing. So there's both vulnerability and community at the same time, which means that, you know, we feel a sense of belonging. And that's key to you know, what humor is and how it works.
Yeah, that makes sense. I once went to a stand-up show in a converted church, and the jokes were great and everything, but it was terrible because the audience were dotted around all over the place, all separated. Mm. And the person that had obviously set the venue up didn't understand comedy. They didn't understand that you need to get everyone closer together. Sure. And all our laughs were just dying in the breeze, you know, like I could see it happening. And I bet that all the acts were like, Jesus, these people are all dotted around all over the place. This is killing the atmosphere. I wanted to ask you about Cannes Lions, adding a humor category. I mean, it's half the reason we sort of did this theme a little bit, because we were like, we wanted to dig into it. But do you think it's that was a good thing, or them adding that category?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing insofar if it raises humor up the agenda, then that's got to be a good thing. So, you know, and if it gets people talking about the subject as we're talking about it now, then that's great. I think, though, the other side to it is that the Cannes Lions, if you mention, you know, Cannes Lions to most people don't know what it is. It is, you know, obviously a huge creative festival, and within the advertising industry is massive. However, there is a certain amount of self-regard, I think, with it, and it doesn't really have much of an impact on everyone's lives, and it shouldn't do. So my overriding interest is how humor works on a day-to-day basis with lots of different brands. That could be a brand such as Apple or Nike, or it could be, you know, a local fish and chip shop. So I'm interested in the whole phenomenon of humor within advertising, rather than how many awards it wins at a festival myself.
That makes sense. I know we're sort of coming to the end of our time now, but I just got a couple of questions to sort of wrap up, really. But the first one, I wanted to ask about music. Do you think this is a good way to communicate humor? I'm just thinking of kind of, you know, silent era film or sometimes adverts I've seen where they'll just have music or a score. And I wonder if they translate better globally, you know, in terms of use of humor rather than, you know, scripted words necessarily.
Frequently they do. Hamlet Cigars famously use bark in their ads, and their ads were extremely funny, extremely commercially successful, and you know, creatively we look back on them as being, you know, the pinnacle of advertising, you know, during the 70s. Also, jingles are very out of fashion at the moment, but jingles are very, very effective, and this is an area in which I think some brands could, you know, some brands are missing a trick here, because they could use jingles far better.
Yeah, I've seen I think we did at the end of last year, we did a sort of the Mediacats kind of adverts of the year that we liked, or campaigns/adverts. But and a couple of them I think I threw in were sort of long form songs. They were full on songs with verses and choruses, etc. I don't know if you remember these. It was Yorkshire Tees had a Pack Your Bags. Yeah. That was that one. And there were a couple of others. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Jingles and long songs. I don't know if they're all gonna make a comeback, but it could be a really funny area. Other than sort of musical based ones, is there any other work that's kind of caught your eye in recent times that's impressed you in terms of humour?
I really like Geico's work. I think they've been consistently strong in using humour over the years. Volkswagen also stand out because they've used humour for something like over 60 years. And that's a great example of a very serious purchase that is being advertised with humour, because obviously buying a car, very important purchase. So those two brands definitely stand out. Ryanair also do phenomenal work, especially on social. Their tactical ability is phenomenal. And I'd also say Specsavers are also extremely good within the UK. Some lovely strategies going on there, some lovely thinking happening there.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned cars because every time I see a car advert, they do tend to be very serious. And they're all very similar, all of them as well. Like, I don't know, they all got together and had a meeting and were like, this is the type of ad we're all going to do, guys. Yeah, so I think there was Fiat did one recently, didn't they? Where different color cars, that was like a bit more humorous.
Yeah, those were lovely. But I think, I mean, what I tend to find with car commercials is often there's like a stubbly man in his 30s, you know, driving very quickly around Alpine passes, and
empty cities. That's a good one.
Empty cities, exactly. Taglines that don't really mean that much at all, you know.
Yeah, it's all about freedom, right? It's freedom and something else. make a car ad in about 3 seconds. But no, honestly, hopefully, maybe this is my call to the car companies. I said, come on, guys, get into humor more. You know, don't let Volkswagen do it all. Okay, so yeah, we're pretty much reached the end of our time, but we'll obviously link to your written interview as well in the magazine, and so people can listen and read and read and listen, and link to some of the work that you do. But for now, just thank you, Paddy, so much for coming on the Media Cat Magazine podcast.
Thank you, Mike. Really enjoyed it. Thanks very much.